myself a good talking to. I'm under the voice in my head.
And she was lying in the grass, and she could hear the highway breathing, and she could see an inbound factory. She's making sure she is not.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. That was the sound outside San Francisco hotels for 8 weeks, but no longer. On Saturday, the San Francisco hotel worker lockout ended, and today more than 4,000 employees are returning to work. Valerie Lappin is a spokesperson with Unite Here Local 2.
There's an agreement between the multi-employer group and Unite Here Local 2 to a cooling off period, during which time we'll continue to negotiate a contract. The employers have agreed not to lock out the workers during that time, and Local 2 will not go on strike.
Negotiations will continue over medical benefits, pension contributions, wages, and contract length.
A mall in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin, has ejected a company using its parking lot to shuttle temporary employees to a CNH Global plant. Workers at the plant in Racine, Wisconsin, went on strike earlier this month after rejecting the company's final contract offer 6 months ago. Strom Engineering was hired by the plant to bring in temporary workers. Mall manager Kurt Pruitt says he was under the impression that the company had construction work in the area, but when he found out that they were being used to replace workers at the nearby plant, he ordered the company off mall property. Represented by the United Auto Workers of America, nearly 350 Racine workers are on strike, as well as 250 other workers at plants in Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois.
Angry and often violent protests outside trade talks in Santiago, Chile last weekend as the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum kicked off. Demonstrators clashed with riot police, hurling missiles at the cops and hurling epithets at visiting President George W. Bush. On Sunday, Chilean President Ricardo Lagos canceled a state dinner after refusing Bush's demand that guests pass through a metal detector.
Striking employees at a newspaper in Youngstown, Ohio, have begun publishing their own online newspaper. Reporters, photographers, drivers, and other employees of The Vindicator walked out last Tuesday after talks over wages and health care benefits collapsed. The online paper is called The Valley Voice, and a print edition will be made available weekly. The workers are represented by the Newspaper Guild Communication Workers of America, who say the online newspaper is meant to bring morale up and make the union's position known. It also lists news, movie listings, sports, and feature stories. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Texas and California have both joined the 100 Club. As of November 15th, they became the first two states to lose more than 100 service members in Iraq. More specifically, 144 service members in California and 111 in Texas have lost their lives in the Gulf. Pennsylvania, Florida, and Illinois have all passed the 50 casualty mark. The highest concentration of war casualties is in the area surrounding Los Angeles, stretching south to San Diego. To date, nearly 1,400 coalition troops have lost their lives.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
John Kerry lost, right? Well, he says he did. He conceded to Bush only hours after the polls closed. But not everyone agrees. Citing a plethora of voting glitches, discrepancies, and oddities in states like Ohio and Florida, many democracy activists and Kerry backers say they're not convinced that the announced vote totals are correct, and they're not giving up as easily as Kerry did. Lest you think that these are merely people who wear tinfoil hats, they're not running around spouting conspiracy theories, but citing official election results that are, well, curious. One widely reported example was a suburban precinct outside Columbus, Ohio, that has 800 voters, but recorded 3,893 votes for Bush. Unreported, however, are many more such curiosities. In a town west of Cleveland, with about 13,000 voters, some 18,000 votes were cast. Also, in suburban Cleveland, 29 precincts reported 93,000 more votes than they had voters. Then there's the strange action by election officials in Warren County, outside of Cincinnati. They locked down the building where the votes were counted, preventing reporters or other citizens from watching the count. They claim that the FBI and Homeland Security agents had warned them that they were under Code Red terrorist alert, thus justifying the extreme secrecy measures on Election Day. In Florida, 29 rural counties with huge Democratic majorities inexplicably reported lopsided victories for Bush. Also in Broward County, when poll workers complained to the election supervisor that boxes full of uncounted absentee ballots were still sitting in storage, they were abruptly escorted out of the building. This is Jim Hightower saying, six prominent members of Congress have called for a nonpartisan investigation into these and other documentable voting problems. Kerry might have lost, but for the public to have faith in our voting system, we ought to know that for a fact.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
You bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, another beautiful week begins here in the People's Republic of Vermont. It's a bright, sunny day. Hopefully where you are, wherever you may be, it's a pleasant day. Even if it's, you know, sometimes even rainy days are nice. Or snowy days. We've had a few of those here so far. Anyhow, welcome. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, with archives at White Rose Society and tomhartman.com. And we're going to be, by the way, by the end of the day here, updating our archives. I'm assuming that Mike's new update also includes the our NLP class from last week, which we'll be picking up on again tomorrow. In the first hour of our program today, how deep is the ditch that the conservatives are digging for the middle class? What can we do to dig out? Our second hour, we're going to get into how long before Iraq becomes a theocracy, and is this why we're leaning on Iran? Some interesting stuff there that probably you hadn't thought about. And in our third hour, the Votergate saga continues, interspersed through all of it, the best of the rest of the news. Our chat room is already well populated. You can drop in there if you want. You can just go to tomhartman.com and click on live chat. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. You can come in as a member or as a visitor. Our quote for the day, this is remarkable. I you know, usually the quote for the day I kind of get into later in the show, but it's a great framing device, as it were. It's a great, this becomes self-evident. T.E. Lawrence, you know, Lawrence of Arabia? in 1920. You'll recall that Iraq in 1918 was called Mesopotamia, and it was actually three old Turkish provinces. The South, historically, you know, long history, had been called Kurdistan, the Kurdish North. And these three areas had been annexed when Turkey essentially ran the Ottoman Empire. And so and after World War One, England said, "We want this." Why? Because there's oil. We want this, and they created this Mesopotamia, as John Stewart would say. And they sent down T.E. Lawrence, good old Lawrence of Arabia, to work things out. And of course, ultimately, it didn't work out. But that's a whole long story. But our quote for the day, from August 1920, in the Sunday Times of London, writing from Fallujah, T.E. Lawrence of Arabia, wrote our quote for the day, and I quote, "The people of England have been led in Mesopotamia into a trap from which it is hard to escape with dignity and honor. They have been tricked into it by a steady..." Now, this, the "they" is, Lawrence was speaking of us, that is, the British at that time. "They have been tricked into it by a steady withholding of information. The Baghdad communiques are belated, insincere, and incomplete. Things have been far worse than we've been told. Our administration more bloody and inefficient than the public knows. It is a disgrace to our imperial record and may soon be too inflamed for any ordinary cure. We are today not far from a disaster," wrote Lawrence of Arabia. "Our unfortunate troops, Indian and British, under hard conditions of climate and supply, are policing an immense area, paying dearly every day in lives for the willfully wrong policy of the civil administration in Baghdad. But the responsibility in this case is not on the army, which has acted only upon the request of the civil authorities." This, you know, the message essentially of the anti-war movement, you know, John Kerry in the last election: don't blame the troops, blame the president, blame Wolfowitz, blame Pearl, blame Fife, blame Cheney and Rumsfeld, the neocons who thought that they could create a new world order, a testing ground for a libertarian democracy, by simply seizing Iraq and imposing upon it their own, you know, immediately a flat tax of 15%, no rules or restrictions on corporations, 100% of profits can be expatriated, can be taken out of the country. Basically, you can strip mine Iraq for its labor, allowing unlimited imports of foreign goods, thus no tariffs, thus no protections for domestic industries. A prescription, historically, if you look at it, for the destruction of a country. Many of these things, of course, things that are part of the conservative agenda here in the United States, some of which have already been implemented and are destroying the economy of the United States. We'll get into that in more detail as the day goes on. And sure enough, the people of Iraq said, no thank you, or they are saying, in growing numbers. We have a Berlusconi alert for the day, the official anthem of Italy here. You remember Silvio Berlusconi, a regular listener to this program, familiar with our regular Berlusconi alerts. Silvio Berlusconi, a small-time crook and small businessman. His business partner recently sent to prison, by the way, for his misadventures. As Berlusconi's business partner, Berlusconi then got law passed through Parliament saying that you can't prosecute him as long as he's prime minister, which he intends to hang on to as long as he can. But anyhow, how did he get to be prime minister? Well, it started out he bought a radio station. And then he bought a newspaper, and then he bought a television station, then he bought another radio station, then another television station, then another newspaper, then a couple more radio stations, then he bought the biggest radio network in the country, then he bought the biggest television network in the country, until it reached a point where Silvio Berlusconi, all by his little old lonesome, owned all the major television networks in Italy, all the major radio networks in Italy, and most of the major newspapers. About 90% of all the media in Italy now is owned by or influenced by Silvio Berlusconi, the single exception being the the Italian equivalent of PBS, which is run by the state, which Berlusconi is now working very vigorously to take control of. He put one of his old former business cronies in charge of it recently. So anyhow, and once he controlled all the media of the nation, Berlusconi then ran for office. Could this be what Rupert Murdoch has in mind? I doubt it, frankly. But instead, he just supports the guys who support him. But Berlusconi ran for office. He did. He ran his party. They have a parliamentary system there. And guess what? They won. What a surprise. And they won big. So anyhow, here this report from today's Wall Street Journal, our Berlusconi alert for the day. Having failed so far to deliver on repeated promises of a sweeping tax cut, Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has painted himself into a political corner from which he frantically is trying to escape. And then they go through the machinations and all this, three-and-a-half-year-old administration, blah-de-blah. He says this is backing for his belief that a tax cut is the only way to jumpstart Italy's underperforming economy is eroding rapidly. See, the Italians are looking at what happened here, and they're going, you know, Berlusconi's saying the same thing Bush is, or Bush did. Let's give tax cuts to the extremely wealthy. Bush being from one of the wealthiest families in America, Berlusconi being the richest guy in Italy. Just a coincidence, no doubt. And it didn't do much, did it? I mean, the American economy seems to be going into a ditch. Well, I suppose it depends on how you look at it. If you watch mainstream media, you watch the business reports. Oil corporations this year showed the largest profits in the history of the oil industry. All the way back to 400 years ago when they were harvesting oil in Hungary. What a surprise. Rama, I got to ask you to turn those speakers down out there. I'm hearing an echo here. Anyhow, so they're looking at the situation and saying, I just don't people in Italy, I just don't get it. You know, it doesn't make any sense. And the others are getting into the act. This month, notes the Wall Street Journal, the International Monetary Fund and the European Commission said a tax cut under current conditions wouldn't give the economy a sufficient boost. Yeah, surprise, surprise. Not only that, it would create the same problem George Bush has created here and that Ronald Reagan created before him, and that is running up a massive debt. Well, they've already done that in Italy under Berlusconi. This is, you know, after all, conservative economic policies. Borrow from your grandchildren and spend now to make it look good so you can retain political power. As the Wall Street Journal notes, they urged Italy to first reduce its crushing debt, which stands at 106% of gross domestic product. But Mr. Berlusconi, having staked his reputation on a tax cut, has little choice but to go ahead. So he's moving forward. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. Speaking of conservative economic policies, yeah, we're seeing now increasingly the clear and obvious results of them. This article in the Associated Press by Darlene Superville. Headline, more than 12 million U.S. families had hunger worries last year. More than 12 million American families, Darlene notes in the AP story that was published in newspapers all across the United States. More than 12 million American families either didn't have enough food or worried about someone in the family going hungry last year, the Agriculture Department said on Friday. She points out these 12.6 million families are 11.2% of all U.S. households. That's pretty amazing. I mean, think about it. You're walking down the street. You look around. Just a little over one out of every 10 people you see. That's 10% of the population. One out of every 10. 11.2% of all U.S. households had at least one member who went hungry or worried about hunger at some time last year, said the department's food security report, which is released as millions of people plan for Thanksgiving's holiday feast. More than 36 million people, including 13 million children, experienced hunger or worried about it last year. The year before, it was 35 million, so the number is increasing. No surprise there. Reverend David Beckman, president of Bread for the World, a hunger relief organization, made a statement of true family values. He says numbers are simply unacceptable for the wealthiest nation on earth. Well, frankly, I doubt you're going to hear any, you know, Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson, millionaire and a billionaire, talking about this. In August, the Bureau reported that the number of people living in poverty grew by 1.3 million last year to 35.8 million for the third consecutive increase. In other words, each one of the 3 years of the Bush administration, we've seen an increase in poverty in the United States. Increases in poverty, they note, usually mean more people are experiencing or facing hunger. As Lynn Parker says, she's with the Food and Research Council, more hunger and food insecurity mean more children who have trouble at school, more illness among children and adults, less ability to purchase a balanced and nutritious diet, and higher levels of anxiety for parents trying to make ends meet. Welcome to George Bush's America, my friends. Now, could it get worse? Stick around. It's the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels.
Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Here's the story.
Story of a corporation.
And there was another corporation that controlled all access to the internet. One day these corporate giants formed a merger.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Experts fear price pressures could worsen. Well, let me get into this. Let's take a call here first. It's 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call into the program. Toll free, 1-866-889-8894. And Jim in Birmingham, Alabama is on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Hey, thanks. Got an interesting story that I just want to tell you about and get your reaction to. And
sure.
See what you think, whether I have responded appropriately. This is not a water cooler situation, but it's very similar. It's a fitness room situation.
Uh-huh.
This morning I was at the local YMCA and working out on a treadmill, and there was an older gentleman next to me, and he and another senior gentleman were having a very loud discussion about how, if you voted for Kerry, you should go back to Canada or that kind of thing.
Right.
And I just said, after a few minutes, hey, not everybody in here agrees with you or agrees with your political views. And the guy got really upset and basically said, you probably voted for Curry. And I said, Curry? Because the Alabama football coach used to be Bill Curry. He now does color commentary on ESPN, too.
Yeah.
I said, Curry, and the guy he was talking with said it was Kerry, Bob, or whatever the guy's name was. And the guy got really upset and said I was trying to keep him from expressing his viewpoints. And I said, no, you can express your viewpoints all you want, but I'm not going to sit here and listen to you preach your reactionary views without letting you know I don't agree with you.
Uh-huh.
And he was pretty upset, and nothing else was said, and after a while he stormed off. My question is, I'm in Alabama. Birmingham's actually a more liberal place than a lot of the state, but still, it's very, 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 in my opinion, not conservative, reactionary. What do you think about that?
And is this kind of an Ann Landers question? Should you be interrupting people having conversations at the gym, were you talking about the politics of it?
No. I mean, the gentleman was not just having a conversation with the guy next to him. He was having a loud conversation where, people within...
He was doing a performance.
Somewhat, yeah.
Yeah.
I think
that's human nature. I mean, that's just human nature. And whether you want to get into the performance or not is up to you.
Well, I guess my question is, people that don't have those views in this part of the country feel like we're, in the minority. We are in the minority. Is it better to just not say anything, or what? I'm just curious about what you think.
Yeah.
I mean, should
yeah.
should you?
I would take those things, one by one. I mean, not having been there, I just don't know. I don't think that broadly, on the one hand, I don't think that we're going to be able to necessarily convert people, particularly by confronting them. There is a real element of sports to all this, and it's real. This is one of the tragedies of American politics. It has become because the political parties, in particular the Republican Party, but also the Democrats to some extent, have become my team, your team, rather than talking about the real issues we're facing, and they boil the issues down to these sound bites, which again is part of the problem of the way that our media operates. But I mean, you know, we can get into that. It's become my team, your team, and I don't care about the facts. And that's, you know, and for that reason, you know, angry confrontations generally don't work. Friendly confrontation might let them know, hey, you know, there are opposition voices around. You might say, hey, you guys, you know, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, I voted, just FYI, there's still some of us out here who are, you know, smart enough to vote for Kerry or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I that's about as far as I would push it personally.
Yeah.
Jim, good luck, and congratulations on having the courage to speak up. I appreciate it. 29 minutes past the hour.
You've supported her through every accomplishment in her life.
Cross, pull, I tied my shoes.
While your ultimate goal is to teach her to stand on her own.
Let go. I can do it.
There are things she just can't do without your support.
There were drugs and alcohol at the party.
Talk with the teens in your life. And if they're in substance abuse treatment and recovery, support them. Help them turn the hardest thing they've ever done into their greatest accomplishment. For information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. That was the sound outside San Francisco hotels for 8 weeks, but no longer. On Saturday, the San Francisco hotel worker lockout ended, and today more than 4,000 employees are returning to work. Valerie Lappin is a spokesperson with Unite Here Local 2.
There's an agreement between the multi-employer group and Unite Here Local 2 to a cooling off period, during which time we'll continue to negotiate a contract. The employers have agreed not to lock out the workers during that time, and Local 2 will not go on strike.
Negotiations will continue over medical benefits, pension contributions, wages, and contract length.
A mall in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin, has ejected a company using its parking lot to shuttle temporary employees to a CNH Global plant. Workers at the plant in Racine, Wisconsin, went on strike earlier this month after ejecting the company's final contract offer 6 months ago. Strom Engineering was hired by the plant to bring in temporary workers. Mall manager Kurt Pruitt says he was under the impression that the company had construction work in the area, but when he found out that they were being used to replace workers at the nearby plant, he ordered the company off mall property. Represented by the United Auto Workers of America, nearly 350 Racine workers are on strike, as well as 250 other workers at plants in Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois.
Angry and often violent protests outside trade talks in Santiago, Chile last weekend as the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum kicked off. Demonstrators clashed with riot police, hurling missiles at the cops and hurling epithets at visiting President George W. Bush. On Sunday, Chilean President Ricardo Lagos canceled a state dinner after refusing Bush's demand that guests pass through a metal detector.
Striking employees at a newspaper in Youngstown, Ohio, have begun publishing their own online newspaper. Reporters, photographers, drivers, and other employees of The Vindicator walked out last Tuesday after talks over wages and health care benefits collapsed. The online paper is called The Valley Voice, and a print edition will be made available weekly. The workers are represented by the Newspaper Guild Communication Workers of America, who say the online newspaper is meant to bring morale up and make the union's position known. It also lists news, movie listings, sports, and feature stories. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Texas and California have both joined the 100 Club. As of November 15th, they became the first two states to lose more than 100 service members in Iraq. More specifically, 144 service members in California and 111 in Texas have lost their lives in the Gulf. Pennsylvania, Florida, and Illinois have all passed the 50 casualty mark. The highest concentration of war casualties is in the area surrounding Los Angeles, stretching south to San Diego. To date, nearly 1,400 coalition troops have lost their lives.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I don't know about you, but it seems to me that 4 years is a very long time. These last 4 years have moved so slow. At times I thought I'd lost my mind. My doctor, well, he sympathized and said that I should face my fears.
I guess so. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Experts fear price pressures could worsen. Let me just boil this down very quickly. There are three issues that most Americans, or three pieces to this puzzle that most Americans confuse. There's the debt, the total amount of money that the United States government has had to borrow from its own citizens or from other nations, about a third of it from other nations, about two-thirds of it domestically, has had to borrow in order to continue to pay for government services. There's the debt. Okay, they just raised the debt ceiling up to $8 trillion. The debt had never been above $1 trillion before Reagan came in. Reagan ran that debt up to a little over $2 trillion, essentially borrowing money from the next generation so that he could produce what looked like a good time in 84 so he could get himself reelected, which he did. And, of course, that borrowing had consequences, and George Bush Sr. had the good sense, here I am praising a Republican, had the good sense to try to mitigate those consequences in some small way and raised taxes and paid the price for it. And, of course, you know, then you had this recession and all the whole mess that came along with it during the end of the Reagan time and the beginning of the Bush time, or the beginning of the first Bush time as a result of Reagan's doing that. And then Clinton, you know, reversed that eventually. And I think that we do need to give some credit to the Republicans in Congress who were also working, and the Democrats in Congress as well, who were working to balance the budget and, you know, increase taxes, decrease spending. And they did that during the Clinton administration. And then George W. went on another borrowing spree and took us from, you know, $2 or $3 trillion in debt up to $8 trillion in debt. He's amassed more debt than all the other presidents in history before him. This massive debt, okay? Now, the way that the debt gets added to every year is by the deficit being the amount of money that we're spending greater than the amount of money that we're bringing in taxes. And frankly, one of the reasons that we have deficits is because of the toxic the sick stories that are being spread by people like Grover Norquist and these other conservatives who, you know, and the right-wing talk radio guys who say things like, it's your money, you should keep it. Well, yeah, if I earn some income, that is my money, and I'm a member of this society. As Franklin Roosevelt said, taxes are the price of admission to a civil society. I'm a member of the society. I want to have the protection of the police department. I want to have the protection of the fire department. I want to have the protection of a strong military. I would like to know that my food is safe and that the USDA is doing their job. I'd like to know that my drugs are safe and that the FDA is doing its job. I would like to know that my air and water are going to be progressively cleaner and the EPA is doing its job. I'm willing to pay for those things. I would like to have an educated workforce, so I'd like to have strong public education because it's necessary for democracy. I would like to have, you know, some coherence in the way that our airwaves are used. I would like to know that there are rules for the game of business and that those rules are enforced by our court system and that our currency is stable. All of these things are paid for with our tax dollars. And for more than 200 years in America, we all understood that taxes are an investment. I remember, you know, during the Eisenhower administration, during the Kennedy administration, during the Johnson administration, even during the Nixon administration, they talked about taxes as an investment. We're going to invest in the nation's infrastructure. We're going to invest in NASA. We're going to invest in clean air and clean water. We're going to invest in our national parks. Our taxes were an investment. And then this little band of very wealthy so-called conservatives came along and said, no, no, taxes are a burden from which we need relief. And the phrase tax breaks and tax cuts, which had always been used, became tax relief. And this tax relief, meaning that the wealthy don't have to pay their share of the investment in America, that what we used to call freeloaders are now, you know, sitting by their pool, getting their dividend checks, and only paying 15% in income tax rather than the maximum 30-some-odd percent that the rest of us may be subject to, not paying FICA, not paying Social Security on investment. And Bush, of course, would like to say anybody who earns their living sitting on the pool waiting for the dividend check has to pay no taxes. They're pretty upfront about this. Let's tax those people who work for a living, not those people who invest for a living. And the result of this, of slashing these taxes for the wealthy, and there's just, you know, you just, and continuing to spend like drunken sailors, and starting a war over in Iraq that's now costing $1 million a minute. So we've spent, what, 3 minutes since we came out of the commercial break here. Oh, there's another $1 million. And creates every year a shortfall, a deficit. So you've got the debt, which is the total of all the deficits combined, and then you've got the deficit, the annual deficit, and then there's the trade deficit, sometimes referred to as the current accounts deficit. Alan Greenspan was talking about this on Friday, and I've been talking about this on this program for 2 years. Our regular listeners know what I'm talking about. This is the real 800-pound whatever in the middle of the room that nobody's talking about. The fact that three-quarters of our non-oil imports are from China, that we are bringing into the United States finished goods, and about the only thing that we're exporting anymore are raw materials. We're exporting grains, hides, lumber, scrap paper, and we're bringing back, you know, finished products. We're exporting iron ore. We're bringing back steel. We've become a banana republic in that regard. This is what third world nations do. They get strip mined. And we've turned all the... And the reason why, of course, is these conservative trade policies that are advanced by handing over our sovereignty to things like the WTO and NAFTA. So here's the situation. When you run a deficit producing a debt... So the country is now $8 trillion in debt, and so you've got people all over the world who are holding our debt. And then, secondly, and perhaps most important, when you run a trade deficit, this year it's going to be about $500 billion, $500 billion. When you run a trade deficit, that is, you buy more than you sell. In order to deal with that fact that you've bought more than you've sold, you have to, you know, something has to give. Right, we buy $1 billion. Well, it's hundreds of billions. Say we buy $1 trillion worth of stuff from China over a couple of years. It's certainly that. Say we buy $1 trillion worth of stuff from China, but we only sell them $500 billion worth of stuff. Well, they end up with $500 billion left over. What are they going to do with it? Well, they can spend some of it to buy our IOUs, in other words, to invest in our debt, which they've done. Although it looks like they're getting increasingly less willing to do that. Or they can buy America. And this is the real shocker here. Let's look at just Pennsylvania, for example. ABB Electronic Technology Systems. Sounds like an all-American company, right? It's in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania. Now it's owned by the Swiss. ABB Extrel, owned by the Swiss. Able Pumps Corporation in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania. It's owned by the Germans. ACLA USA, they make polyurethane tires, wheels, rollers in Butler County, Pennsylvania. Owned by the Germans. Accutronic USA, they do motion simulation equipment. They're based in Allegheny County. They're owned by the Swiss. Adcus Corp, it makes semiconductors in Allegheny County. Owned by the South Africans. Adonix Transcom, warehouse and distribution software. In Allegheny County. They're owned by the French. AEA Technology Engineering. You'll notice these are just the A's that I'm giving you. AEA Technology Engineering in Allegheny County. It's owned by the British. Affoval in Allegheny County, owned by the French. Adker's National Roll Company. They make iron and steel chrome rolls in Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania. They're owned by the Swiss. Aldi Distribution. It's a supermarket chain in Butler County. They're owned by the Germans. All Clad Cookware. You can buy anywhere in the United States. Based in Washington County, Pennsylvania. Owned by the Irish. Well, we're shipping all our jobs, many of our jobs, over to Ireland. They end up with all this extra money. What are they going to do? Well, they come over here and buy our companies. Alstom Power Conversions in Allegheny County. Owned by the French. They make electrical equipment. Amaral Baltec Inc. This is a company that makes industrial conveyor belts and transmission belts. They're owned by the Dutch. American AGIP Corporation. They manufacture lubricants in Butler County, Pennsylvania. They're owned by the Italians. The American Beverage Corporation. They make fruit juice, cocktail mixes under the Daly's brand name. They're owned by the Dutch. They're in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania. We're just looking at Pennsylvania. The American Video Glass Company in Westmoreland, Pennsylvania, owned by the Japanese. Amtech in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, owned by the British. Andritz Ruthner, an engineering firm in Washington County, Pennsylvania, owned by the Australians. A&H Refractories Company in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, owned by the Germans. Appar Infotech, an information technology company in Washington County, Pennsylvania, owned by the Israelis. Apex Europe in Washington County, owned by the Dutch. In Beaver County, Pennsylvania, there's Ardex Incorporated. They make engineer cements. They're owned by the Germans. In Washington County, Pennsylvania, there's our Veda Company. They're owned by the French. And on Ascar in Washington County. They do systems integration for broadcasters, owned by the Canadians. Now, that's just some of the A's in Pennsylvania. We have about 1/20 of America now, of the total business of America, has been bought by foreign companies or foreign owners. Why? Because conservative economic policies have run this nation into such debt that we're having to sell off our nation to sustain it. To sustain the buying levels at Walmart, we are selling off all these businesses to these foreign companies. It's just, you know, a very simple, very straightforward equation. And as the dollar gets weaker, we get cheaper, right? It gets even easier to buy American companies. And guess what? Today's Wall Street Journal, as dollar falls, Washington sends mixed signals. This weekend, President Bush said, "The people express concern about the value of the U.S. dollar. I reiterated that my government has a strong dollar policy." Yeah, right. Although the U.S. won't say it out loud, notes the Wall Street Journal, the administration continues to acquiesce to a declining dollar. But the U.S. faces the challenge of making sure the dollar's decline doesn't get out of hand, either economically or politically. I'm telling you, this is a disaster coming. Credit card interest rates going through the roof. You're going to see home mortgage rates going through the roof. We are going back to the disaster. This is the same setup. This is the same thing that happened with Nixon. And to some extent, the latter years of LBJ's administration, of borrow and spend economics. But it's been made far worse by our participating in NAFTA and GATT, the WTO, and the dominance in American industry of Walmart and companies like it that are importing goods from China. By eliminating trade tariffs, these so-called barriers to trade that protected American industry for 200 years and more, we have created a train wreck. Let's take a few calls. Ken in Long Beach, California, on the line. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind?
I was going to say, Tom, that it's amazing that a company that was in bankruptcy, you know, supposedly an individual is in bankruptcy, you know, like me, myself, I had a bankruptcy about 5 years ago, and I didn't even go through with it, by the way. I just filed. I can't, you know, buy a house or anything, yet they got $11 billion. That's with a B, you know. They throw money around like nothing for these guys.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, once again, he's bankrupt again. In fact, the first time he was bankrupt, they wouldn't foreclose on him because he owed too much money.
Well, there's a whole different set of rules. I mean, we've had two major bankruptcy reforms here in the last 4 years under the Bush administration. And in both cases, what they did was made it harder for people like you and me to declare bankruptcy and easier for corporations to use bankruptcy to basically screw employees of their pension benefits.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. I think as far as Bush, what he's trying to do is just dissolve the United States. These people don't believe in nation states at all. He wants to be president of some kind of a zone of the Americas, of which will be some kind of a province or something.
Yeah,
down there in Chile or Colombia now.
Absolutely right, Ken, but it's more than just a zone of the Americas. His father talked about it. He called it the New World Order. His father started pushing for this, George Bush Sr. Bill Clinton signed it. We gave our sovereignty away with the World Trade Organization. Now, private for-profit corporations can sue the United States, and in fact, it's happening right now, saying the laws that your elected representatives pass are not legal laws. They're not binding. Glenn in Oklahoma, what's on your mind, Glenn? Hey.
Well, I was watching Face the Nation on Sunday and watching the millionaire, multimillionaire Bill Frist on there, and I don't know how he got to be the leader after the
he's got the most money.
Yeah, the fines, the way they defrauded Medicare. But anyway, he's on there, and I'm watching him. They're talking about changing the filibuster laws. They're trying to change these laws to make them better for Republicans now, right?
Right.
And when he got through, they confronted him with the fact that they voted to filibuster.
Yeah, but Frist himself had used filibuster laws. I agree. And here, of course, is the question in my mind. If the Republicans want to do this, is it because they expect to have single-party rule forever? That worries me. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting the squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost a half a million workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
Since 1982, the Teamsters Pension Fund has been managed by Wall Street firms like Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan, companies who've shifted investments away from long-term bonds to stocks which generate fees. Similarly, President Bush and many Republicans want to shift Social Security investments away from a protected public trust into private savings accounts.
Once they privatize Social Security, we would have the return of massive old age poverty.
Again, Kenneth Kenpath.
We're not all going to become millionaires playing the stock market with an IRA, just as we won't all be rich if we bargain individually with corporations instead of having unions.
Kenpath says the union movement must unite under the threat of a corporate-styled Bush administration.
There's a general trend to privatize, individualize, to break down solidarity within our society. Solidarity in the labor movement doesn't just mean on the picket line. It means in our pension plans and our health plans that we care about the retirees, that we care about each other, that the higher-paid workers have to fight for the lower-paid workers or they're going to become lower-paid workers.
For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Don't worry about the ABM treaty. Don't worry about
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Willie in South Carolina, is on the line. Hey, Willie, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how you doing today?
Great. What's up?
Good. I was just listening to the list that you were running off from Pennsylvania about all the different companies that are owned by different countries. And I got to thinking that big blow up when John Kerry had said, I can't remember the exact words, but he was basically saying that, you know, we as America would need some type of approval. You know, and he didn't say approval or
no, he said he basically what he said is that if the United States is going to invade some other country, we really have to convince the rest of the world. It has to pass the smell test. He said the global test. You know, basically, you've got to get the rest of the world to agree that this thing makes sense. Otherwise, you're not going to have any support. And it's just common sense.
Right. And Bush and them immediately jumped on it and said they would never, you know, give another country that type of power over this. But, you know, well, he should have just came back with the same list you got and said, look, we don't have to give them.
They're coming to take
it.
They're taking it. That's right. We don't have to give it to them. They are taking it.
They already have it. They can close company after company after company and cause such massive unemployment that we would be in depression in a year.
You're absolutely right, Willie. And not only that, they could also sell off the stock or the treasury bills and bonds that they own, and they could wipe out our economy. I mean, they just stop buying our debt. And in fact, there's a lot of people actually terrified of this. A lot of very cautious, you know, Alan Greenspan just talking about this in the Wall Street Journal again today. But anyhow, let's move along. John in Boston's on the line. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great.
I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
About the value of the dollar, do you think it's wise for me to pay off my home mortgage now in light of what might happen to the dollar?
Well, that's a good question. If you have a fixed-rate mortgage,
which I do.
Okay. Then and it's a fairly low interest rate, then actually it's probably best to sit on that debt because the dollar is becoming worth less and less and less, and so you're going to see, and as a consequence of that, you're going to see an interest rates going up substantially.
I see.
You'll have the situation like my father had. You know, he bought the house that I grew up in back in 1953 or 55 or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
and he had like a 3.5-4% mortgage. And, you know, for the 20 years of that mortgage, he had banks. I mean, that was, you know, that went into the time during Nixon when home mortgage rates were hitting 17-18%. And the banks were begging him, you know, to please please refinance and things. And he just paid it off, you know, so slowly. I mean, you know, it's actually, I mean, that's one of those rare situations where it's actually probably a good idea to hang on to the debt.
Hang on to it. Huh?
Yeah, as the dollar declines.
Right, okay.
Sure. Thanks, John. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Well, there is, you know, Alan Greenspan also today, he says, this is in the Wall Street Journal, the world will reach the limits of its willingness to come to the U.S. This is a huge red flag. And he says the solution is to reduce our budget deficit. Well, that's half of it. Of course, Greenspan can only, you know, handle fiscal stuff. The other half is to change our trade policies and do that immediately. We must.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. That was the sound outside San Francisco hotels for 8 weeks, but no longer. On Saturday, the San Francisco hotel worker lockout ended, and today more than 4,000 employees are returning to work. Valerie Lappin is a spokesperson with Unite Here Local 2.
There's an agreement between the multi-employer group and Unite Here Local 2 to a cooling off period, during which time we'll continue to negotiate a contract. The employers have agreed not to lock out the workers during that time, and Local 2 will not go on strike.
Negotiations will continue over medical benefits, pension contributions, wages, and contract length.
A mall in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin, has ejected a company using its parking lot to shuttle temporary employees to a CNH Global plant. Workers at the plant in Racine, Wisconsin, went on strike earlier this month after ejecting the company's final contract offer 6 months ago. Strom Engineering was hired by the plant to bring in temporary workers. Mall manager Kurt Pruitt says he was under the impression that the company had construction work in the area, but when he found out that they were being used to replace workers at the nearby plant, he ordered the company off mall property. Represented by the United Auto Workers of America, nearly 350 Racine workers are on strike, as well as 250 other workers at plants in Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois.
Angry and often violent protests outside Trade Talks in Santiago, Chile last weekend as the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum kicked off. Demonstrators clashed with riot police, hurling missiles at the cops and hurling epithets at visiting President George W. Bush. On Sunday, Chilean President Ricardo Lagos canceled a state dinner after refusing Bush's demand that guests pass through a metal detector.
Striking employees at a newspaper in Youngstown, Ohio, have begun publishing their own online newspaper. Reporters, photographers, drivers, and other employees of the Vindicator walked out last Tuesday after talks over wages and health care benefits collapsed. The online paper is called the Valley Voice, and a print edition will be made available weekly. The workers are represented by the Newspaper Guild Communication Workers of America, who say the online newspaper is meant to bring morale up and make the union's position known. It also lists news, movie listings, sports, and feature stories. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Texas and California have both joined the 100 Club. As of November 15th, they became the first two states to lose more than 100 service members in Iraq. More specifically, 144 service members in California and 111 in Texas have lost their lives in the Gulf. Pennsylvania, Florida, and Illinois have all passed the 50 casualty mark. The highest concentration of war casualties is in the area surrounding Los Angeles, stretching south to San Diego. To date, nearly 1,400 coalition troops have lost their lives.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
I've been chastised by Walmart. The largest corporation in the world apparently was stung by one of my recent commentaries. I'd pointed out that Walmart, which touts itself as a model of free market success, actually has built its market muscle in large part by milking us taxpayers, having squeezed more than $1 billion in subsidies from state and local governments, giving it a competitive advantage to clobber local businesses. In response, Sarah Clark, Director of Corporate Communications at Wally World, fired off a missive to media outlets that carried my Walmart commentary. She asserted that it was, quote, full of inaccuracies. Was the key figure of $1 billion in taxpayer giveaways to Walmart inaccurate? No, she did not dispute it. Rather, Walmart's chief PR flack tried to change the subject, offering numbers purporting to show that the company is a generous corporate citizen. In the past 10 years, Ms. Clark informs us, Walmart has paid $4 billion in property taxes alone. But wait, it owed those taxes. This was not a contribution, but a debt. Other businesses pay property taxes, too, yet they don't get $1 billion in special subsidies. Then Ms. Clark notes that her company, quote, generated $52 billion in sales taxes. But wait again, that's not Walmart's money. It's money that local consumers paid to finance public services. This money is also the result of sales that the monopolistic giant took from local businesses. Walmart doesn't expand a community's buying power. It just redistributes purchases from other stores to itself. But Ms. Clark presses on, claiming that Walmart has remitted $192 million in wage taxes. Once more, however, this money is not a voluntary contribution from a good-hearted company. It's taken out of the employee's wages, as required by law. This is Jim Hightower saying, to see the full report about how Walmart does indeed milk taxpayers, go to goodjobsfirst.org.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here. Save time and money by shopping for all of your holiday business and home entertaining needs in one convenient stop. Visit the club this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to sample a variety of delicious food perfect for any occasion. While you're there, you can pick up gifts for your employees, family, and friends. During this busy holiday season, don't miss your chance to shop, sample, and save on all of your business and home entertaining needs at the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club this weekend. Sam's Club, we're in business for small business.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website, if you'd like to drop into our chat room, which is getting pretty full these days. Some interesting conversations in there. And during the breaks, I hang out, chat with folks. So, really and truly, I say this and people think I'm being facetious. Some of the finest minds on the internet are to be found in our chat room. I am not kidding you. Some of the funniest, some of the most insightful, some of the most thoughtful, some of the strangest, certainly. But we're glad to have them all. A suggestion by the Toronto Star columnist, this from the Toronto Star, that George W. Bush could be indicted for war crimes when he arrives in Canada at the end of this month was raised at the daily White House briefing yesterday. I just find this amazing that the Toronto Star, the largest newspaper in Canada, the sort of the Canadian equivalent of the Wall Street Journal, or the New York Times, rather, ran last week an article in some detail laid out the case based on both Canadian and international law of exactly how and why George W. Bush not only could but should be arrested for war crimes if and when he visits Canada. Now, they did also point out in the article, however, that the one big problem was that there is this law, there is this loophole in Canadian law that says foreign heads of state here on official business cannot be arrested for war crimes. So they ended up speculating, after they go through this whole building the case against him, they ended up speculating that maybe the thing to do is to get him to come up there on a hunting trip or something, and then they could nab him. You know, so the Times has this other article, the Toronto Star, a new article, talking about this issue and the fact that Kofi Annan has called the war in Iraq illegal. Tuesday, the Star's Thomas Walken suggested Bush would be a perfect candidate for prosecution under Canada's Crimes Against Humanity and War Crimes Act. And they point out that Scotty McClellan, the Bush spokesweasel, dismissed the question as ridiculous and suggested the reporter who raised it had spent too much time on the campaign of candidate Ralph Nader, who, of course, had nothing to do with this. But then, nothing to do with it. It has nothing to do with reality in Bush world. Let's take a few phone calls. We've got the lines have been lit up here for a while, and we'll just get to it. 1-866-889-8894, and I appreciate you folks waiting. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to comment on the last hour when you were reading those stats of the deficit and debt and all the foreign companies that own a good chunk of America. But you know, ever since I caught you on C-SPAN, I've been trying to listen to you on the Internet, and I learned quite a bit to use in my debates with Republican friends and family members, and I've called you a couple times regarding how the Limbaughs of the world have succeeded in hoodwinking America, that capitalism and democracy are the same thing, and that Sweden...
Yeah, and in fact, they're not. Capitalism
right.
is an economic system, and democracy is
right.
a political
system.
But
when they yell Sweden is socialist, most Americans equate that with meaning dictatorship. You know,
well,
they
see, that's the problem. I mean, right. in the Soviet Union, they conflated or they combined the, you know, the word socialism was used as both an economic system and as a political system.
Exactly.
And although technically within the Soviet Union they didn't do that, they called communism the political system and socialism the economic system. But in any case,
right.
most Americans don't.
We have to combat when we fight these right-wingers at barbecues and everywhere to first educate them that socialism is not a dictatorship.
No, it's
that,
not.
That
yeah.
Sweden is free and it's a democracy, blah, blah, blah. But what I wanted to ask you, after you read all those stats and you said 5% of the USA is owned by foreign companies, and I was thinking, well, those are good numbers I could use with my Republican friends. But they're going to say, well, that's just globalization and we probably own twice as much, so blah, blah, blah. What kind of stats or numbers do you have that I can go to show that it's not balanced out like that?
Well, it's a good question. Actually, you'd have to go country by country and you know analyze that. And frankly, I don't think, to the best of my knowledge, nobody's ever done that.
But you can see that's how they're going to come back with, right?
But well, yeah, of course they will come back with that. And here's your response to it. I mean, there have always been foreign companies participating in the United States economy. We did have, throughout much of the history of the United States, laws that made it far more difficult, like Japan does right now. You want to start a business in Japan, you have to have a Japanese partner who owns 51%. Or at least they did the last time I knew, because we did this in the 1970s. We started a company in Japan with a Japanese partner, and they had to own 51%. That was the law.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that the ownership, that foreign ownership of American companies, American assets, American lands. Now, just huge tracts of American forest land are foreign-owned now in the United States as well. American mineral resources, you know, the largest gold miner in the United States is actually a Canadian company. American manufacturing, and so on and so forth. All of this, this is really a phenomenon that's very recent. It's a phenomenon that has come about in the last 15 to 20 years, by and large. It used to be that we were the largest creditor to the world. That is, more countries up until, you know, and I'm frankly not sure exactly when the flip over happened, but I believe it was during the Reagan administration. It's certainly been in my lifetime. It's certainly been within the last 30 or 40 years, in fact, that for most of American history, once we paid off the Revolutionary War debt, we were a wealthy enough country that we loaned money to other countries in the world,
right.
and because of their debt to us, and we shipped our products to other countries in the world, and because of their trade deficits to us, we were able to own their, you know, their economies or own chunks of them,
yep.
and we were famous for this. I mean, Dole Pineapple owning Hawaii before it became a state, and you know the banana republics were literally called the banana republic because we owned all that land. We ran those banana plantations. Our Africa, our rubber stuff in Africa in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, and on it went. I mean, all over the world, we American companies had staked out claims. Now that trend has reversed, and that trend has reversed as a direct consequence of these conservative economic policies that have essentially given control of the United States foreign policy and our trade policies to multinational corporations. So now the Bush administration, as to some extent the Clinton administration did, to a large extent the previous Bush administration did, certainly to a large extent the Reagan administration did, make decisions based on not what's best for the United States, not what's best for the American middle class, but what's best for the multinational corporations.
Aren't these cons, they're trying to get us back before the New Deal. That's what they want.
Well, yeah, not in regard to international trade, which is a whole separate thing. But, yes, they're trying to undo the New Deal, absolutely, and everything that followed, the Great Society and everything else. And they're not ambiguous about this. I mean,
yeah, I mean, this new book by Jeremy Rifkin called The European Dream, and I've called before how Europe is like how we were in the 60s, you know, with the union strong and everything. They're trying to say, no, we don't want to be like Europe, and that's why you never see any news programs showing how well the Europeans live, because you better not show the Americans that, man.
Yeah, and having lived there, having lived in Germany for a year in the 80s,
right.
I can tell you this: even though they consume 1/7 of the energy and produce about 1/7 of the waste that we do, their standard of living is excellent. Tom, thanks for the call. I appreciate you raising these things, and it's good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Martha in Massachusetts is on the line. Hey, Martha, what's on your mind?
Hey, how are you, Tom?
Great, but I'll get better. What's up, Martha?
I read that letter, the Toronto Star.
Yeah.
The article about wanting to arrest George.
Yeah.
And I also saw on the internet there was an article of impeachment drawn up by a law professor.
Yeah, it was actually drawn up by Ramsey Clark, the former United States Attorney General under, as I recall, Jimmy Carter. Drew up articles of impeachment against George W. Bush. This was 2 years ago, and I believe that a member of Congress introduced them or tried to introduce them, but, of course, as long as the Republicans control the House and Senate, there will be no discussion of that.
Well, aren't there any Republicans that are honest or can't see what he's doing?
Not anymore. No,
there are
a few Republicans that will occasionally speak out, like John McCain does on issues, or Chuck Hagel, of course, trying to position himself for a run for the presidency in 4 years. But by and large, as we saw with Arlen Specter here last week, any Republican who speaks out in a way that would defy Emperor George here, or King George III, is going to find themselves emasculated very quickly.
Yeah, Karl Rove will destroy them.
Yeah, absolutely. As he did with Valerie Plame and Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie, for Joe's sin of speaking out. Martha, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Alan in Missouri on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Yes, I was listening to the BBC this morning, and according to them, the international observers think that Ukrainian election was rigged.
Yeah,
I was wondering what they say about our election.
Well, yeah, it's a really good question. In fact, I've got that story here someplace. In fact, it was going to be my lead story for this hour. Maybe I left it. Gee, it was a little tiny clip, but yeah, what has happened in the Ukraine? And this was in the newspaper today. in fact, the one that I clipped out was out of our local paper, is that the one of the candidates in the exit polls is leading by about 15, 20 points, but in the actual counting the vote, it's a very tight race that seems to be favoring the other candidate, not unlike what happened in about 8 states here in the United States. And it is, you know, these questions are being raised, and unfortunately they're not being raised in the mainstream media in the United States. And the Ukraine story was a little 3-paragraph, you know, kind of sidebar thing in today's paper. But, yes, that is happening. I'll dig that out, and I'll actually read that report after the next news, after the next commercial break.
Maybe we need to be marching around like that, too.
Yeah. Yeah. What is impressive is how the people in the Ukraine are standing up and speaking out, and the people in the Ukraine have a long history of this. I mean, they're good, solid, well, relatively speaking, I mean, since the fall of the Soviet Union. My daughter actually went to school in the Ukraine. She studied in Simferopol, which was where they trained Carlos the Jackal, the old spy school, and they turned that into a language school after the Soviet Union fell, and she studied Russian and Ukrainian there. And the Ukraine has an extraordinary history, and the Ukrainian people are just saying, hey, enough. Ah, here we go. My producer, Louise, just found this for her. Ukraine's prime minister was leading the nation's runoff presidential election, according to partial vote tallies released Monday, but his Western-leaning challenger held the advantage in an exit poll funded partly by the United States. With 69% of precincts counted following Sunday's election, Prime Minister Viktor Yanukovych had 48.58% of the vote, compared with Viktor Yushchenko's 47.78%, the Central Election Commission said. But an exit poll conducted by anonymous questionnaires under a program funded by Western governments said Yushchenko had received 54% of the vote, compared with the Kremlin-praised Yukhanov's 43%. So it looks like, you know, if the exit polls are correct, it looks like Vlad Putin has got his hands in the Ukrainian election, which, you know, would probably surprise nobody. But good point, and thanks for raising it, Alan. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Tim in Chicago on the line. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm great. We got about a half a minute here, Tim. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to notice that governments throughout history have debased their currency to help the people in charge, to help the government from when they're gotten financial trouble. I noticed the Roman Empire. I collected Roman coins.
Yeah.
The whole, it just got less and less silver. Henry VIII did it. They did it in Germany in 1923. I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely. Debasing your currency.
Where are we?
Yeah. Well, we're right there all over again. Although there's an interesting spin on the Roman thing that I'll mention right after this break.
Great.
Yeah, good point, Tim. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Every morning you send your kids out into a world filled with drugs, peer pressure, alcohol, even violence. How can you be sure they have the skills to find their way home safely? That they can make good decisions when you're not watching over them? This is Barry Williams, urging you to call the Girls and Boys Town National Hotline for help and advice at 1-800-448-3000. The call is free anytime, day or night. 1-800-448-3000. Just call. Your kids will be glad you did. Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on the clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. It don't matter anyhow. And it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe.
So with all the discussion going on in Toronto and the Toronto Star in Canada, it's actually going on across Canada, about whether or not George W. Bush should be arrested as a war criminal for invading a country that represented no threat to him, killing 100,000 of their civilians, not to mention thousands of their military, not to mention thousands of his own military, and dragging a whole bunch of other countries with him, and violating the terms of the Geneva Accord by creating a concentration camp in the United States and putting people in it without access to lawyers and without access to trial by jury and so on. Without access to the Red Cross and just the normal Geneva Convention things. In the midst of all this discussion now, George W. says he's going to go to Canada. And so here now, the Washington Bureau, the Toronto Star, again the Toronto Star reporting on this. The White House is leaning against having President George W. Bush address Parliament when he visits Ottawa, citing fears the U.S. president would be heckled during his speech. This is the same thing as during the campaign, when the only way you could get into a Bush rally, a Bush campaign stop, was to sign a loyalty oath and prove that you were actually a registered Republican and all this other nonsense. And now the White House is leaning against having, and they just don't want it to happen. They would be bad photo op, right? No final decision has been made, but those involved with the planning of the decision of the visit, which will be at the end of this month, want to avoid pictures on U.S. network television of a president being booed or shouted at. Pretty amazing stuff here. It's our president afraid to speak. Now, in the midst of this, in the story, they go through the fact that, well, they actually did get promises from several of the more outspoken opposition politicians in Canada that they won't heckle Bush. So maybe he will speak. We'll see. But only after they get, it's Arlen Specter revisited, right? get promises. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, what's going on in Washington today?
Well, this place is better than Doornail. As you know, the president is going to be at his ranch through Thanksgiving. Meanwhile, they're decorating the White House for Christmas. Of course, not that any tourists are going to really get to see it. In fact, there was a bunch of Hispanic legislators. My friend Valerie Espinoza was here for the Hispanic legislators, all the newly elected, not only legislators, but any elected officials. And they got a tour of the White House. But somehow, they wouldn't let them into the White House. So they only got a tour of the old executive office building for security reasons. I mean, give me a break.
These are members of Congress?
No, these are like all kind of elected town clerks and state legislators, anybody who's newly elected on a state level. Hispanic legislators.
Amazing.
They brought them all to Washington for a week.
Yeah, it must be part of the Bush plan to make friends with Hispanics, right?
Is that unbelievable?
Yeah.
Okay, so other little pieces of gossip, and I'm afraid that gossip is going to be pretty slim in the next week or so. But first of all, Congressman Menendez got on the television today and said, look, if Bush wanted this 9/11 bill passed, he would have gotten it passed.
Sure.
We find it very interesting, he said, basically, that his Joint Chiefs of Staff issued a letter to the Armed Services Committee and that also the situation in terms of the his own people, other people at the Pentagon, the civilians at the Pentagon, don't want this bill. So if that's the case, and these are Bush appointees, why is it that the bill didn't pass?
Well, you know, it's Rumsfeld, actually, is the bottom line, and it's the
right.
and the neocons, and, you know, Feith and Wolfowitz and these guys, and it didn't pass because, you know, the fix was in. I mean, you know, Bush was talking out of both sides of his mouth.
For sure. Also, yeah. A couple other interesting things. Tom Ridge, although he said today that he thinks that intelligence reform is going to pass by next year, he is also saying that there's a lot of rumor that he's actually going to resign early, right after the inauguration.
Tom Ridge will.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. He said he was going to...
Bernie Carrick, no, he didn't say that. That's what people are thinking.
Yeah.
Bernie Carrick looks like he may be the possibility for it.
Interesting. Okay, Ellen Ratner, the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for the report today.
You got it.
Great to hear from you. Talk to you tomorrow. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. That was the sound outside San Francisco hotels for 8 weeks, but no longer. On Saturday, the San Francisco hotel worker lockout ended, and today more than 4,000 employees are returning to work. Valerie Lappin is a spokesperson with Unite Here Local 2.
There's an agreement between the multi-employer group and Unite Here Local 2 to a cooling off period, during which time we'll continue to negotiate a contract. The employers have agreed not to lock out the workers during that time, and Local 2 will not go on strike.
Negotiations will continue over medical benefits, pension contributions, wages, and contract length.
A mall in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin has ejected a company using its parking lot to shuttle temporary employees to a CNH Global plant. Workers at the plant in Racine, Wisconsin went on strike earlier this month after rejecting the company's final contract offer 6 months ago. Strom Engineering was hired by the plant to bring in temporary workers. Mall manager Kurt Pruitt says he was under the impression that the company had construction work in the area, but when he found out that they were being used to replace workers at the nearby plant, he ordered the company off mall property. Represented by the United Auto Workers of America, nearly 350 Racine workers are on strike, as well as 250 other workers at plants in Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois.
Okay,
angry and often violent protests outside trade talks in Santiago, Chile last weekend as the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum kicked off. Demonstrators clashed with riot police, hurling missiles at the cops and hurling epithets at visiting President George W. Bush. On Sunday, Chilean President Ricardo Lagos canceled a state dinner after refusing Bush's demand that guests pass through a metal detector.
Striking employees at a newspaper in Youngstown, Ohio, have begun publishing their own online newspaper. Reporters, photographers, drivers, and other employees of The Vindicator walked out last Tuesday after talks over wages and health care benefits collapsed. The online paper is called The Valley Voice, and a print edition will be made available weekly. The workers are represented by the Newspaper Guild Communication Workers of America, who say the online newspaper is meant to bring morale up and make the union's position known. It also lists news, movie listings, sports, and feature stories. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Texas and California have both joined the 100 Club. As of November 15th, they became the first two states to lose more than 100 service members in Iraq. More specifically, 144 service members in California and 111 in Texas have lost their lives in the Gulf. Pennsylvania, Florida, and Illinois have all passed the 50 casualty mark. The highest concentration of war casualties is in the area surrounding Los Angeles, stretching south to San Diego. To date, nearly 1,400 coalition troops have lost their lives.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, so did Helen Thomas. She made the mistake of being the first reporter to ask Bush a hard question in the first few months of his presidency. Helen Thomas, who'd been sitting in the front row at the White House since Jack Kennedy's administration, who has been a reporter since Truman's administration. She's in her 80s now. She's still a reporter. She's 84 years old. She's still a reporter. And here now one of these right-wing websites, Newsmax.com, I believe it is, has an article in which they ran into. Newsmax bumped into Thomas in the lobby of New York's Waldorf Astoria while she waited for a lunch date. Asked about the election result, the sharp-tongued reporter simply put her hand on her face and said, "My God, the man is a fascist, I tell you." And that Condi, speaking of Condi Rice, "I tell you, the woman is a monster," she kept saying. Newsmax, of course, thought this was humorous. I think it's... I tend to agree, frankly, with Helen Thomas. Fascist in the classical sense, as used by Mussolini, who invented the word when he said fascism should more correctly be called corporatism, which was the word that he was using before he invented the word fascism, because it is the merging of state and business interests. The vast majority of legislation now is written not by our legislators, but by corporations, by lobbyists. We now have a state that is under the control of the very largest of our corporate interests, and that is the dictionary definition. Look it up in any dictionary published before the late 80s when the dictionary... Anyhow, here we are in Iraq. You might have seen this piece on 60 Minutes last night where they pointed out that roughly 15,000... And frankly, I've seen other reports that suggest the number's even higher than that. But according to the Department of Defense, it's 15,000. Soldiers have been injured in Iraq and are not included among the casualty lists. And they interviewed a guy who lost his leg, and they interviewed another guy who was paralyzed from the neck down, neither of whom were counted as Iraqi war injuries because both happened in so-called accidents. Actually, there were accidents. This guy's truck went off the road, something like that. Therefore, it's not a war injury. So... trying to cover this thing up, but this is just the Band-Aid on the cancer. The real problem is the one we're going to be facing in the next few months if we actually hold elections. And Yoki J. Drazen wrote a thought-provoking piece about this in the international section of today's Wall Street Journal. And this is the issue, my friends. I mean, this is the one that we really need to be concerned about. The Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani. Remember him? He's like the most respected Shiite leader. Keep in mind, the Shiites control 60% of Iraq and virtually 100% of Iran. And Sistani was an Ayatollah in Iran. And when we kicked out Saddam, or arrested Saddam, when we invaded Iraq and ended Saddam's regime, Sistani came from Iran to Iraq and set up shop. He had been in Iraq much earlier. He's an old guy. And he had been run out of town on a rail by Saddam Hussein, who had a secular government. He said, hey, we're not, the religious have no role in this government. We're not going to pass laws because the Quran says so. And so in Saddam's Iraq, women could work. They didn't have to wear the veil. They could go to school. They were teachers. They were, on and on. Again, not to say that Saddam was a good guy. Just let's point out the reality of the situation with regard to religion. And so Sistani comes back in, and he's pulling together a coalition to field a case. This is where we're going to discover, and I've been saying this for some time, and you will not hear a peep out of this in the mainstream media, and it's not because this is some weird conspiracy theory, but it would call into question the sanity of the neocons, in my opinion, in some regards. What you're going to see is Iran having won the Iran-Iraq war through us. Iran, 60% of Iraq was Shia. And Iran was saying, which is almost all Shia, and Iran was saying, hey, most of that country next door to us is Shia, and they are being oppressed by the Sunnis and by the but in particular by the secularists, by those who believe that government should not be run by the religious. And we, the Iranians, believe the government should be run by the religious, as, the Ayatollahs in Iran, even though they have an independent and semi-secular parliament, all of its decisions can be vetoed, and regularly are, by the Ayatollahs. It's sort of like the Supreme Court, right? And they said, the Shias, our friends, the Shias are being oppressed in Iraq. And we must liberate them. And they went to war against Saddam Hussein. And this bloody, horrible war was fought. And the United States at that time, this was when Reagan was president, and Don Rumsfeld was the Secretary of Defense, and in the Ford presidency. The United States during this period of time, and Dick Cheney was... was he chief of staff to Ford? Or, in any case, the United States during this time was siding with Saddam because we felt that a theocracy, a theocratic government, the theocratic Iran, wasn't necessarily a stabilizing force in the Middle East, particularly since part of their theocracy involved annihilating Israel. They were agreeing with the PLO's official position at that point with it that Israel had no right to exist. And so we sided with Iraq. We sided with Saddam, and we provided him with satellite intelligence photos on a regular basis. Rumsfeld went over, shook his hand. We supplied him with the military stuff. The gas that he used in the Kurds, we sold to him. Rumsfeld authorized it. Saddam was our guy until 1990 when he invaded Kuwait. And then he became not our guy anymore. Which was just made the neocons incredibly happy. But anyhow, Iran for 30, 40 years now, well, basically ever since Saddam came to power, has been saying, well, actually, to make that correct, since the Carter administration, when the Iranian Revolution happened, when the Ayatollah Khomeini, who had been living in exile in France, had been smuggling these audio cassettes into Iran. He won a revolution with audio cassettes. He'd been shipping these audio tapes into Iran for about a decade, urging people to rise up. And it created this incredible underground movement that actually rose up and overthrew the Shah. Now, it coincided with the Shah getting really sick with cancer, so, you know, you can spin that story a couple of different ways. But in any case, in their minds, they overthrew the Shah, who was put into place by the United States 20 years earlier when Mossadegh, who had preceded him, had decided to kick out the American oil companies and nationalize Iran's oil. And as soon as he did that, the CIA went in and overthrew him, and we installed the Shah, who invited our oil companies back into Iran. Okay. So then during the Carter administration, the Ayatollahs kick out the Shah, and they take over the country. And from that point forward, they were saying, hey, we want Iraq also, because there's all these Shias living there. There are people, not to mention the fact there's a lot of oil there. And so they had this war, and the war eventually ended in a draw, with both sides having lost over 1 million young men. I mean, terrible. This was a terrible, terrible war, an incredibly bloody war between Iran and Iraq. And so then Iran says, well, we'll figure out another way to get Iraq. How about we get the Americans to get it for us? So they send their agent, a guy by the name of Ahmed Chalabi, to Washington, D.C. And he gets in tight with some very gullible ideologues, led in large part by a guy named Paul Wolfowitz. They call themselves the neocons, and they think that they're going to create a utopian world. These guys are idealists. And they're convinced that if they can just create one good, solid Arab democracy in the Middle East, then all the rest of the Middle East will suddenly become democratic. And so they have to do that. Right? And Chalabi comes and he says, you know, pay me $340,000 a month and I'll start feeding you intelligence. And they do. And he's got this group, the Iraqi National Congress, and he says, we have our people in Saddam's government. We've got our people all through the country. If you'll simply overthrow Saddam, the people will welcome you with flowers, and the Iranian National Congress, we'll run the country and we'll turn it into a democracy and everything will be wonderful. And Wolfowitz and Feith and Pearl and Cheney and Rumsfeld, the neocons, this little group of neocons who date back to the Nixon administration, these former disciples of Leo Strauss, they said, cool, we'll do that. We'll believe you. And so they said, you know, as they ginned up this war. And they felt that there were a lot of good reasons to invade Iraq. The main one was this idealism that they had about, you know, we can create democracy with the barrel of a gun. It's not been tried before, but we think we can do it. And so we're going to, yes, in World War II is a different situation. We can deal with that some other time, but it's not the same. And so they said, okay, cool, Ahmed, we'll do this. So now we discover, just in the last 2 months, we've discovered that during this time, Chalabi was feeding them phony baloney about what was going on in Iraq, and Colin Powell humiliated himself in front of the world with Chalabi's information. And Chalabi was taking top secret information that he had learned, like, for example, the fact that we had broken the Iranian code, their intelligence security systems code, their Farsi code, he took the information from us that we had broken their code and conveyed it to them, to the Iranians. But we didn't learn that until just very recently. And so, you know, we had the invasion, and Iran is just sitting there going, this is so cool. These Americans, they're doing it for us. We couldn't defeat Saddam, but they are. Isn't this cool? And so then Sistani comes over from Iran. And Chalabi, when the word starts coming out that Chalabi was actually the agent of Iran, he has to flee. Where does he go? Iran. That's where Ahmed Chalabi has been hanging out. Now, this is not a secret. I mean, this is in the media. And so now here in this article in today's Wall Street Journal, talking about how Sistani is trying to pull together a political party or a political coalition. There's this party called Dawa, which is the one of the largest Shiite parties. The Supreme Council of the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, which is another right-wing conservative Shia group. And the Iraqi National Congress, led by one-time Pentagon favorite Ahmed Chalabi. And on top of that, they're trying to cut a deal with Muqtada al-Sadr. This, the young firebrand who has suddenly decided to get into politics. Well, this is why. If elections are held in Iraq in January, like we say that they're going to be, I mean, this is a vote. Iraq is going to end up a Shia Islamic theocracy, and they are going to create a partnership with Iran, and Iran is going to sit back and say, we did it. We did it, and we got that sucker George W. Bush to do it for us. See, the French faced the same thing in Algeria. I mean, the French pulled out of Algeria and turned the government over, this was maybe a decade ago. I forget exactly when this happened. And Algeria said, okay, we're going to become democratic. And what happened? Well, the same thing, by the way, happened in Egypt. Nationalistic, right-wing religious parties started growing in such strength. The Islamic Brotherhood is one of them. Started growing in such strength in Algeria and in Egypt that the government had to cancel the elections and crack down and throw all these people in jail. It's like the Pat Robertsons and the Jerry Falwells of Egypt and Algeria tried to take on the government through the electoral system, and they had so many supporters among the people because everybody goes to the mosque and they only men can vote, and it's all the men who go to the mosque, and they're all and these guys are religious nationalists, merging religion and nationalism, which by the way is another part of the neocon agenda, but that's a whole other discussion. That Algeria and Egypt both had to just absolutely crack down on these people. And my prediction is we're going to face the same thing. That we're going to get out right up close to these elections and we're going to say, hey, wait a minute, Sistani, Chalabi, and Sadr all organizing together and fielding a bunch of candidates for parliament? We're going to end up with Iran here in Iraq. And we're going to have to make some very, very tough decisions. What a mess George has given us. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting the squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost a half a million workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
Employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
Since 1982, the Teamsters Pension Fund has been managed by Wall Street firms like Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan, companies who've shifted investments away from long-term bonds to stocks which generate fees. Similarly, President Bush and many Republicans want to shift Social Security investments away from a protected public trust into private savings accounts.
Once they privatize Social Security, we would have the return of massive old age poverty.
Again, Kenneth Kenpath.
We're not all going to become millionaires playing the stock market with an IRA, just as we won't all be rich if we bargain individually with corporations instead of having unions.
Kenpath says the union movement must unite under the threat of a corporate-styled Bush administration.
There is a general trend to privatize, individualize, to break down solidarity within our society. Solidarity in the labor movement doesn't just mean on the picket line. It means in our pension plans and our health plans that we care about the retirees, that we care about each other, that the higher paid workers have to fight for the lower paid workers or they're going to become lower paid workers.
For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile. And everywhere I look, your eyes would find.
And welcome back. And stay tuned, by the way, December 15th, with regard to this whole Iran thing. And December 15th is when the big meeting happens between Iran and the European Union. And the main point that the United States is making with regard to all this nuclear stuff that Colin Powell was making the other day is that Iran has made a deal with the EU that in exchange for continuing to have normal trade relations and other kinds of relations with the EU, Iran will stop will not produce weapons-grade material and won't, you know, go forward with a nuclear bomb program. And the U.S. is saying, no, in fact, they are. And everybody is like trying to jockey into position. That's what's going on right now with this stuff. Colin Powell getting into the act, and what really baffles me is Colin Powell coming out and saying, you know, it looks like this is actually happening. The Iranians are doing this nasty stuff. And then the White House coming out and saying, you know, it was a single source, a walk-in source. We're not sure it's good intelligence. Why would the White House undercut Colin Powell, their own Secretary of State, on something that they actually might want, you know, to make Iran look bad? It's there are several possible explanations for that. We'll get into those as the week goes on. Right now, let's take a call from Tom in Eureka, California. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom.
Tom, good to hear from you and good to talk to you. I had a suggestion, judging by what we've heard learned this morning from Canada. I think that we need to get an all-expenses-paid free vacation for a ski vacation for George Bush and maybe even his wife up in Canada. You know, and just kind of like, hey, it's free, come on up, you know, give him all the pretzels he wants.
You know, that's a great idea. You know, in fact, probably, you know, I noticed the other day that one of these right-wing talk show hosts, Robert Redford had said that if Bush wins, he's going to move to Paris or something like this. And one of these right-wing talk show hosts had bought tickets for him to Paris, and it got him in all the trade media. I had to buy tickets for George Bush to go to Canada on a hunting trip.
There you go. Cheap publicity.
Yeah, cheap stunt. There you go.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Tom. Good to hear from you. I mean, the bottom line is that this is really kind of scary stuff. It's to have not just scary stuff. It's humiliating and embarrassing. It's beyond scary to have a president who other countries are seriously discussing indicting as a war criminal in the pages of their largest newspapers, and they're having to get their elected officials to promise not to speak out against before he'll come to their country. This is we have sunk very far, my friends. We have really sunk far, and it's just this is our national embarrassment, George W. Bush. Killing thousands of people really makes a little section of the White House look like nothing. Nothing at all.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. That was the sound outside San Francisco hotels for 8 weeks, but no longer. On Saturday, the San Francisco hotel worker lockout ended, and today more than 4,000 employees are returning to work. Valerie Lappin is a spokesperson with Unite Here Local 2.
There's an agreement between the multi-employer group and Unite Here Local 2 to a cooling off period, during which time we'll continue to negotiate a contract. The employers have agreed not to lock out the workers during that time, and Local 2 will not go on strike.
Negotiations will continue over medical benefits, pension contributions, wages, and contracts.
In Wisconsin has ejected a company using its parking lot to shuttle temporary employees to a CNH Global plant. Workers at the plant in Racine, Wisconsin, went on strike earlier this month after ejecting the company's final contract offer 6 months ago. Strom Engineering was hired by the plant to bring in temporary workers. Mall manager Kurt Pruitt says he was under the impression that the company had construction work in the area, but when he found out that they were being used to replace workers at the nearby plant, he ordered the company off mall property. Represented by the United Auto Workers of America, nearly 350 Racine workers are on strike, as well as 250 other workers at plants in Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois.
Okay,
Angry and often violent protests outside trade talks in Santiago, Chile last weekend as the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum kicked off. Demonstrators clashed with riot police, hurling missiles at the cops and hurling epithets at visiting President George W. Bush. On Sunday, Chilean President Ricardo Lagos canceled a state dinner after refusing Bush's demand that guests pass through a metal detector.
Striking employees at a newspaper in Youngstown, Ohio, have begun publishing their own online newspaper. Reporters, photographers, drivers, and other employees of The Vindicator walked out last Tuesday after talks over wages and health care benefits collapsed. The online paper is called The Valley Voice, and a print edition will be made available weekly. The workers are represented by the Newspaper Guild Communication Workers of America, who say the online newspaper is meant to bring morale up and make the union's position known. It also lists news, movie listings, sports, and feature stories. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Texas and California have both joined the 100 Club. As of November 15th, they became the first two states to lose more than 100 service members in Iraq. More specifically, 144 service members in California and 111 in Texas have lost their lives in the Gulf. Pennsylvania, Florida, and Illinois have all passed the 50 casualty mark. The highest concentration of war casualties is in the area surrounding Los Angeles, stretching south to San Diego. To date, nearly 1,400 coalition troops have lost their lives.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
John Kerry lost, right? Well, he says he did. He conceded to Bush only hours after the polls closed. But not everyone agrees. Citing a plethora of voting glitches, discrepancies, and oddities in states like Ohio and Florida, many democracy activists and Kerry backers say they're not convinced that the announced vote totals are correct, and they're not giving up as easily as Kerry did. Lest you think that these are merely people who wear tinfoil hats, they're not running around spouting conspiracy theories, but citing official election results that are, well, curious. One widely reported example was a suburban precinct outside Columbus, Ohio, that has 800 voters, but recorded 3,893 votes for Bush. Unreported, however, are many more such curiosities. In a town west of Cleveland with about 13,000 voters, some 18,000 votes were cast. Also in suburban Cleveland, 29 precincts reported 93,000 more votes than they had voters. Then there's the strange action by election officials in Warren County, outside of Cincinnati. They locked down the building where the votes were counted, preventing reporters or other citizens from watching the count. They claim that the FBI and Homeland Security agents had warned them that they were under Code Red terrorist alert, thus justifying the extreme secrecy measures on Election Day. In Florida, 29 rural counties with huge Democratic majorities inexplicably reported lopsided victories for Bush. Also in Broward County, when poll workers complained to the election supervisor that boxes full of uncounted absentee ballots were still sitting in storage, they were abruptly escorted out of the building. This is Jim Hightower saying, six prominent members of Congress have called for a nonpartisan investigation into these and other documentable voting problems. Kerry might have lost, but for the public to have faith in our voting system, we ought to know that for a fact.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Thank you.
a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the third hour of our program. The Ukraine's prime minister was leading the nation's runoff. Well, here's the bottom line. I mentioned this briefly in the last hour. An exit poll conducted under a program funded by Western governments. So we will fund exit polls in other countries to find out if the election's been rigged. Somehow when the election polls in the United States, you know, in most of the state, somehow when the election polls in the United States show that there might have been irregularities, however, we wonder if there's something wrong with the election polls. You know, the election polls in most of the states in the United States were accurate. In the vast majority of the exit polls in the United States absolutely showed the exact results. But there was about a dozen states, by coincidence, including seven or eight swing states, I believe it was eight, where there was this huge, what they called redshift, in one case as much as 9 points, where the exit polls and the actual machine tabulations coming out of the voting machines were different, and the voting machines said that Bush had won, and the exit polls said that Kerry had won. And this, you know, in aggregate would have accounted for millions of votes, and certainly the Electoral College. And, of course, the conspiracy theory on the right, as put forward by Dick Morris, is that that means that the left-wing hackers had somehow hacked the exit polls. But, you know, we'll leave that discussion for some other time. Here's the interesting thing. The Soviet, the Kremlin-based candidate in the Ukraine looks like he's leading in the election right now in the Ukraine by about 1 point, 48-47%. So according to the official vote, he's the Kremlin-backed guy, Putin's guy, is leading by 1 point. But according to the exit polls, the guy who is opposed to Putin and is in favor of something more closely resembling democracy in the Ukraine, according to the exit polls, he got a 54% versus 43% for the Kremlin guy. So what's happening now? They are in the streets in the Ukraine. By the way, there's a great website. Jeff Cook sent me this information. HonestElections.us, http://HonestElections, that's plural, .us, designed to educate and show the average citizen how to get off their duffs and do something, rather than just depend on someone else. Yeah, it's worth checking out. I checked it out. It's a nice website. Blackboxvoting.com, Common Cause, MoveOn.org, everybody, it seems, is verifiedvoting.com. Everybody's putting up websites now to talk about this issue. John Zogby, president of the Zogby polling firm, you know, John Zogby, he says in this interview, this is published in the Oakland Tribune, an article by Rick Goldstein. He called this year the Armageddon election. And Ralph Nader then added to that. He said that the Republican Party was able to steal the election before Election Day. You go, oh, God, are we still talking about this stuff? I think it's important that this be discussed until there is some explanation for these anomalies. You have Bev Harris down in Florida. We talked with her on the air here last week, last Thursday, finding evidence of vote fraud in Volusia County, potential vote fraud. We have exit polls that don't agree with the machine totals. You've got machines that are counting the vote, as much as 80% of the vote in the swing states, counted on machines controlled by two corporations that are Republican affiliated. One has, as its CEO, Wally O'Dell of Ohio, who wrote the famous memo saying he was going to deliver Ohio for George W. Bush. The other ES&S, in its former incarnation, the company that became ES&S, was headed up by Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator from Nebraska. It's a Nebraska-based company, ES&S. And a lot of people are asking the question, you know, why is it that the Republicans have been fighting Rush Holt's bill in the House of Representatives and the similar bill that was put forward by Bob Graham and Hillary Clinton in the Senate to force these companies to be transparent about how our votes are handled? Why are the Republicans fighting this? Why have they been fighting this for 2 years? Why is it that these private companies say, you can push the button or you can fill in the little circle and our scanner will scan it or our machine will take your button push into the bowels of a computer where it will be processed by software that we program. And we will then later at the end of the night tell you what the total was, but you can't look at our software. You do not have the right to know how your vote is being handled. Of all the things to privatize, we've privatized the vote? I mean, I suppose you can make a case for privatizing the concession stands at Yellowstone. Yes, it was, you know, a giveaway deal to a Republican company that was, you know, all the usual political corruption, cronyism stuff. It stunk. Still stinks. But at least you could say it's not going to imperil democracy. But privatizing the vote, that's what we've done. With this bill that the Republicans pushed through Congress 2 years ago, the Help America Vote Act, the HAVA Act, the federal government took $3.8 billion of your and my tax money, gave it to the states, and said, use this money to buy computerized voting equipment from these Republican corporations. And they did. And we voted on them. And in most states, it looks like the machines actually worked the way they're supposed to because the exit polls agreed with what the machines said. But there were a few swing states that decided who would become president where the machines and the exit polls didn't line up. And there are more than a few of us out there who are wondering, and not just on the left, by the way. I think any principled conservative should be as concerned about this as any principled liberal. Any Republican should be concerned about this as any Democrat. Because the day will come, the tables will turn. Who is handling our vote? As this article by Rick Goldstein notes, facts suggest something went very wrong on November 2nd. Ralph Nader points out that there was the good old-fashioned vote fraud. He says what they do is minorities, talking about the Republican Party. He said they make sure there aren't enough voting machines for the minority areas. Then people have to wait in line for hours, and most of them don't. There are all kinds of ways, and that's why I was quoted as saying this election was hijacked from A to Z. By the way, we're negotiating with Ralph to have him on the program here in the next couple of days. Probably tomorrow or Wednesday. Probably in the first or second hour of the program. John Zogby, the pollster, was concerned about the difference, writes Rick Goldstein, between the exit polls and the official vote counts. Zogby said, quote, we're talking about the free world here. On November 10th, the University of Pennsylvania professor Stephen Freeman, whose expertise includes research methods, compiled an analysis titled The Unexplained Exit Poll Discrepancy. His findings suggest that Democratic Senator John Kerry should have received far more votes than he did, particularly in the three battleground states of Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. He puts the odds at 250 to 1 million. That the exit polls would be that different than what the voting machines said. Why are you not hearing about this in the CBS Evening News? This is not the tinfoil hat crowd. This is not, the stereotype of some guy sitting in Montana in his you know, some 15-year-old or some, you know, grizzled, strange person, you know, banging out messages about how the aliens have taken over the country, and or the president is really one of the lizard people. Now, we're talking about the University of Pennsylvania, the University of California, serious professors and researchers doing the statistical analysis. We're talking about John Zogby, Ralph Nader. You know, during the election, I was saying, don't vote for Ralph Nader. I think he went off on an ego trip that was, you know, unfortunately destructive to Ralph and potentially harmful to America in some ways. I'm willing to be corrected on that, by the way, but it's still my position. We'll hear what Ralph has to say. But nonetheless, I don't think anybody would say that Ralph Nader's a kook. He's a very principled guy. This is why he's calling for a recount in New Hampshire, by the way. In New Hampshire, it was the state that had the greatest spread between what the exit polls said and what the machines said. 9.5%. 9.5%. According to Zogby, it would have required, quote, wrong sampling in wrong areas throughout the country, end quote, or a purposeful manipulation of data to obtain exit poll results so significantly different from the official totals. He viewed neither as a possibility. When asked exactly what happened, then Zogby replied, quote, a problem. I don't know where it is, but something's wrong here. The recount in New Hampshire, by the way, five of the 11 New Hampshire voting wards where Nader requested a recount is going to happen on Thursday of this week. So, you know, the story is continuing to develop. Harvey Wasserman of Franklin County, Ohio, writes of the experience that many people, particularly a minority community in Ohio, experienced trying to vote. He said it was like Mississippi in the 50s, and it was deliberate. Had there been enough voting machines and had people had equal access to the polls with a reliable vote count, there is no doubt that John Kerry would have carried Ohio. Yeah. You know, again, I want to say I'm not even sure that it would be a good idea to reverse the vote. I don't want to go that far. If there was fraud, then we need to get to the bottom of it. If there was no fraud, we need to get to the bottom of it, because there's a lot of us out here, right, left and middle, who are saying, how come our vote is no longer transparent? For 200 years in the United States, our votes were counted by civil servants whose job was to count the vote, and they were supervised and overseen by people from the political parties to make sure that there was no hanky-panky, and it worked pretty good. I mean, yeah, there was the occasional county in Georgia or Florida or something where, you know, it's the local hacks had taken over, but it worked pretty good. And now we've got these corporations saying, no, you can't see. I think there's a problem. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Four more years of sweet compassion. Conservatism feels so right. I know why. Be well cared for so long as I am rich and white. Four more years of subtle discourse. Such sense of savoir faire. I'm N.W.E.'s a statesman.
Kevin Zeese, who is the manager of the Nader campaign and who had been on this program a couple of times, I gave him a pretty rough time. During the campaign, Kevin Zeese writes this piece that was published in Common Dreams on today, Monday, November 22nd. And, I'm sorry, it was published on Saturday, the 20th. And he says that Nader had a meeting with Kerry. And at this meeting with Kerry, Nader said, why don't we agree on a couple of issues and make them like signature issues and really get out there and beat the bushes and make a lot of stink about this stuff because we can beat the Republicans on these things. And now, of course, Ralph Nader hadn't taken our NLP course and didn't know about submodalities and, you know, kinesthesia and all that stuff. But nonetheless, you know, he thought you could win on the issues, right? He didn't realize you have to emotionally hit people. But that's another topic. But apparently, according to Kevin Zeese, on these three issues, basically Kerry said, nah, don't want to do it. Even though I agree with you, I'm not going to make these issues election issues. And the reason why was because he was afraid, according to Zeese, more or less, he was afraid of giving Nader any more credibility. And, he felt like he had his own issues. But I think it's fascinating. This kind of we're rewriting the history of the campaign here. The issues were these three major issues that Nader suggested. Number one, ending corporate welfare. If you end corporate welfare, you save taxpayers over $200 billion annually. Now, keep in mind, human welfare at the federal level, the federal budget for human welfare is around $41 billion a year. Corporate welfare is around $200 billion a year. About 5-1. And if we ended corporate welfare, I mean, that's an enormous amount of cash that would be available. It could reduce the deficit. We could build bridges. We could rebuild our schools. We could provide health care for everyone. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you could do if you ended corporate welfare. And, in fact, I would take it a step beyond that, beyond Ralph's suggestion. I mean, his corporate welfare is just the money that corporations are getting. There was just another one of these bills passed, another corporate welfare bill. Was it yesterday, I believe? Friday, rather. And, you know, just let's pass out more money to the corporate. You know, the energy bill, Cheney's energy bill, another $18 billion in corporate welfare. Okay. But I'd go a step beyond that. I would say that let's make it illegal, as most countries have done, for a corporation to set up a post office box in a country that doesn't have an income tax, like the Cayman Islands or the Bahamas, doesn't have a corporate income tax. To set up a post office box there and then say that that's them doing business from there and therefore they don't have to pay taxes in the United States. And this is the big scam. Enron had some 900 of these things. Halliburton has a bunch of them. I mean, there's not a multinational, there's not a major corporation in the United States that hasn't done this, by and large. I mean, there may be a few, but I would be surprised, frankly, if there are any left. I remember a year or so ago when Stanley Tools, you know, the great American brand, Stanley, decided to go offshore. And there was such a stink about it. I mean, it got into the media that they backed off for a while. Anyhow, so he says end corporate welfare, number one. Number two, strengthen the rights of 42 million non-unionized workers who want to join a trade union. Let's let people... Working people, this is almost half of our workforce, by the way, who have said that they would like to be members of a union. Let's go back to the laws that allowed them to be unions, to be members of unions. Let's roll back some of these anti-labor provisions that have been put into the labor code by Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., and George Bush Jr., and go back to that. And we'll get to the third one right after this break. 29 minutes past the hour.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. That was the sound outside San Francisco hotels for 8 weeks, but no longer. On Saturday, the San Francisco hotel worker lockout ended, and today more than 4,000 employees are returning to work. Valerie Lappin is a spokesperson with Unite Here Local 2.
There's an agreement between the multi-employer group and Unite Here Local 2 to a cooling off period, during which time we'll continue to negotiate a contract. The employers have agreed not to lock out the workers during that time, and Local 2 will not go on strike.
Negotiations will continue over medical benefits, pension contributions, wages, and contract length.
A mall in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin, has ejected a company using its parking lot to shuttle temporary employees to a CNH Global plant. Workers at the plant in Racine, Wisconsin, went on strike earlier this month after ejecting the company's final contract offer 6 months ago. Strom Engineering was hired by the plant to bring in temporary workers. Mall manager Kurt Pruitt says he was under the impression that the company had construction work in the area, but when he found out that they were being used to replace workers at the nearby plant, he ordered the company off mall property. Represented by the United Auto Workers of America, nearly 350 Racine workers are on strike, as well as 250 other workers at plants in Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois.
Angry and often violent protests outside trade talks in Santiago, Chile last weekend as the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum kicked off. Demonstrators clashed with riot police, hurling missiles at the cops and hurling epithets at visiting President George W. Bush. On Sunday, Chilean President Ricardo Lagos canceled a state dinner after refusing Bush's demand that guests pass through a metal detector.
Striking employees at a newspaper in Youngstown, Ohio, have begun publishing their own online newspaper. Reporters, photographers, drivers, and other employees of the Vindicator walked out last Tuesday after talks over wages and health care benefits collapsed. The online paper is called the Valley Voice, and a print edition will be made available weekly. The workers are represented by the Newspaper Guild Communication Workers of America, who say the online newspaper is meant to bring morale up and make the union's position known. It also lists news, movie listings, sports, and feature stories. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Texas and California have both joined the 100 Club. As of November 15th, they became the first two states to lose more than 100 service members in Iraq. More specifically, 144 service members in California and 111 in Texas have lost their lives in the Gulf. Pennsylvania, Florida, and Illinois have all passed the 50 casualty mark. The highest concentration of war casualties is in the area surrounding Los Angeles, stretching south to San Diego. To date, nearly 1,400 coalition troops have lost their lives.
You've been listening to Wind, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Ralph Nader, three suggestions he made. The first was to John Kerry. He said, we can campaign on this stuff together, turn these things into major issues. And, of course, you know, this was an attempt by Ralph to get some publicity, and Kerry didn't give it to him, didn't go along with it. But this was Nader's suggestion. Number one, let's have a campaign to end corporate welfare. That would save us $200 billion a year immediately. Immediately. End corporate welfare as we know it. To paraphrase Newt and Bill. You'll recall, this is part of Newt's contract with America and also part of Bill Clinton's agenda. And that he's very proud of, actually. I'm somewhat ambivalent about it. We're seeing significant increases in poverty in the United States, in the number of hungry children, and this leads to all kinds of other social ills. But that's a discussion for another time. Anyhow, end welfare as we know it for corporations, number one. Number two, strengthen the rights of the 42 million non-unionized workers who wish to join a trade union and advocate for a living wage for all full-time workers. He points out that between one in three full-time workers earn between $5.15 and $10 an hour. So, you know, advocate for living wage. And, of course, living wages adjust from place to place. I mean, you know, try living on $10 an hour in Manhattan. Very hard to do. I mean, you know, on the other hand, $10 an hour is pretty good money in some other parts of the country, relatively speaking. I mean, you know, you can pretty good money, he says. Jeez. You can get by on it, let's say. So anyhow, it's that's why the point of what I was saying. I don't want to get into, you know, where a minimum wage should be. Frankly, I think an appropriate national minimum wage. In the UK, I believe somebody sent me an email about this a couple days ago, and my recollection is that he said it was around $8.50 or $8.95, almost $9 an hour in the United Kingdom, the minimum wage. And, you know, it seems to me that it should be at least $7 and maybe more for a national minimum wage. But the point is that if we had strong labor unions in the United States, it would become almost a moot point. Because when you look back at the time when the labor unions were strong in the United States, from 1935, when the Wagner Act was passed that allowed for unionization, that ended the ability of corporations to play games and keep unions out, up until 1947. At that point, we went up to the point where we had 35% of the American workforce unionized. For every union job, there's an equivalent job in the non-union sector, as it were, simply because the union jobs are creating the floor. And people say, hey, I can get a job making this much. That's what I'm looking for. There's competition for the jobs. I mean, after all, it's not – see, this again, people think that businesses give jobs to people. It's not how it works. Businesses have things that need to be done, and if they're done, the business operates profitably. And so they hire people to do the work. And so basically, you know, people who are doing work are adding value to the business. They're paid $10 an hour, but they have to be producing $12 an hour, or $14, or $20, or $50, or $100, or $200 an hour. There is this ratio in business, in fact, about worker productivity, how much money a worker has to produce to justify a particular salary. It varies from industry to industry and parts of the country to parts of the country. But the bottom line is everybody in business understands this. Employers don't give people jobs. Employers hire people to increase their profits, to make money for them, to grow their business. It's just a very simple thing. So if you have strong labor unions where they can negotiate, where you have some parity of power between labor and management, where the workers are not just totally disempowered, as is the case across America with the Walmartization of America now, but if we were to go back 30, 40 years, when over 70% of workers in America could raise a family with a single wage earner's salary, put their kids through school, pay their medical bills, and have a pension for retirement. If we were to go back to that time and that kind of a model, then what you would find is that in some parts of the country, the average wage would be different from other parts of the country because it would reflect the local cost of living. So the need for some sort of national federal mandate that says you must pay a minimum wage of X becomes minimized. I mean, it's still a useful thing to have. And as I said, I still think it should be at least $7 an hour. And frankly, I think it should be more than that. But it becomes less critical to the survival of the middle class because the unions are in there playing that role. And the simple reality is that our labor laws have been rigged largely since Ronald Reagan came into office and declared war on organized labor, busting up PATCO as his first strike in that war. There has been this systematic dilution of our labor laws and making it, you know, harder and harder over and over and over again for unions to unionize, for people to have the unions that they want. And there's all these, you know, check cards and all this, you know, there's all this lingo that everybody in the labor union understands. But the bottom line is that it's just, you know, it's a very significant issue. So 42 million people in America say they would like to be members of unions. Let's let them. Let's give them an opportunity to, Ralph Nader says to John Kerry. And finally, Nader says to Kerry, let's crack down on corporate crime, fraud, and abuse. I mean, they're looting our 401ks. They're wiping out our pensions. They're devastating the lives of people. Let's crack down on these people. I mean, if we can spend all this money to build all these prisons to put people who are smoking pot in jail, and no, I'm not exaggerating. About half of all the people in prison nationwide are there for drug law violations. If we can build all these prisons and we can spend $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year per person to put people in jail for smoking pot or taking other drugs, and I don't mean to minimize the problem of drugs in the United States, then we certainly can have a few of those prison cells reserved for people who are ripping us off to the tunes of millions of dollars. As Nader likes to say, his favorite quote, George Bush is a giant corporation masquerading as a human being in the White House. And, you know, he, to a large extent, he is a, you know, kind of this front group. So Nader goes to Kerry and says, let's do this thing. And Kerry, according to Nader, says, well, no, don't think so. Don't want to do it. Don't want to get involved. And, you know, I can do my better myself, doing my own thing and all that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to hear Ralph's side of this. It'll be interesting to hear John Kerry's side of this, frankly. But these are important issues, and I'm surprised that they haven't been raised more. George Bush, this to get into the best of the rest of the news here. George Bush has reprimanded Tony Blair. Get this, this has got to be. You wonder, you know, Blair came over here a couple of weeks ago, and he looked like a whipped puppy. You saw him shaking hands there with George W. when they first met. And it was like the smile on his face was being held in place by crazy glue. And now, he must just be feeling so humiliated. This has got to be just such a tough time for Tony Blair. Because, you know, things are not going right, and Bush won the election, and Blair was already starting to make overtures to Kerry, because everybody thought, of course, Kerry was going to win. And now, in the Independent, you know, one of the major newspapers in California, lead story, Bush's slapdown for Blair on climate change. And this has just got to be humiliating. President Bush has reprimanded Tony Blair. This is an article by Jeffrey Lean and Francis Elliott. Has reprimanded Tony Blair for sounding the alarm over global warming and pressing for international action to combat it, senior Washington sources say. They report that the White House has objected to the Prime Minister placing the issue at the top of the agenda when he heads the G8 group of the world's most powerful nations next year, and to the strong tone of his recent speeches warning of climate change. Interesting. Bush slapping down Blair. Mr. Blair has repeatedly described global warming as the single biggest long-term issue facing the world. In a major speech this autumn, this is from the article in the Independent, in a major speech this autumn, he added that it was a challenge so far-reaching in its impact and irreversible in its destructive power that it radically alters human existence. The White House last week said that, quote, President Bush strongly opposes any treaty or policy that would cause the loss of a single American job, end quote. So, let's see. If you've got a company that's producing toxic waste and it's killing people, but stopping it would lose a single American job, George Bush is opposed to stopping that. Yep, sure enough. This contrasts with Mr. Blair's insistence in recent speeches that, quote, it is quite false, this quoting Tony Blair, it is quite false to suggest that there is a trade-off between economic growth and environmental protection, end quote. And that tackling climate change, quote, can unleash a new and benign commercial force, providing jobs, technology spin-offs, and new business opportunities, as well as protecting the world we live in, end quote. But now Blair has been told by George Bush, shut up, Tony. Don't talk like that. We don't want to hear it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. 8894. Ed in California. Hey, Ed, where in California is on the line?
Oh, San Juan, Southern California.
Oh, beautiful country. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind?
Well, I got a question. A couple of years ago, and I'm a late bloomer, I had a history teacher that said no change in any country, no revolution has ever happened without affecting the rich. And rich started. The American Revolution, the French Revolution. Is it the same thing happening today that we're afraid to talk? We're talking to the common people. And it's not until we hit the rich people and their pocketbooks that things are going to change.
Yeah, well, here's the flip side of that, Ed. I would say that the revolution has already happened, that the rich engineered it.
Oh, absolutely.
And that they have taken over, and that there really was a coup d'etat in America. And, you know, it started in the 60s, poof, you know, here it is. It's the neocons and the conservatives, and they don't represent the traditional values that used to be called conservative. They don't represent the Eisenhower values. They don't even represent the early Richard Nixon values, you know, where he got on TV and bragged about the fact that his wife had a plaid dress or a plaid coat, jacket, rather than a fur. And instead, they represent the interests of the Donald Trumps of the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pure and simple. And so, yeah, there has been a revolution in America, and you know, there is class warfare.
That's what I mean. We need to take it back. The only way to do it is to hurt them.
Well, yeah. Good luck.
Get them in their pocketbooks and are going to scream.
Yeah. Well, see, I was hoping, actually, in the early days of this Iraqi war, that there would be some economic blowback in a way that would cause the wealthy elite in America to say, hey, wait a minute, this war isn't such a good idea. Because it was so obvious we were being lied into it, and it was going to cause the deaths of a lot of people unnecessarily. And we were basically doing Iran's work for them, doing Iran's dirty work for them. But unfortunately, the Iraq war is making a lot of very wealthy people a lot wealthier.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, how would you suggest, Ed, that be done? I mean, that you create a situation where the wealthy are saying, "Hey, it's not in our interest to be going along with these so-called conservatives any longer."
The only way to do it is to have an economic slowdown.
Yeah,
and I mean where we just stop purchasing the goods.
But see, here's the thing: during some of the greatest fortunes in America were built during the Great Depression. If you have money, the old phrase "cash is king" came out of the Great Depression. If you have money in the bank, and a depression happens, the people who make it through fine. I mean, the last depression, the people who made it through okay were those who had family farms. That is, they were self-sufficient. And you know, depression. A depression will hit those people who are like working people making, say, between $50,000 and $300,000 a year. You know, the kind of high end of the white collar workforce.
Yeah.
It'll hit them really hard. But that's not those are not the power brokers in America. If somebody has a net worth over a couple million bucks, a depression, particularly one that is as conspicuously on its way as this one, and particularly in a world where it is so easy now to move out of American currencies and into other foreign currencies, is not only not going to hurt them, it's going to provide them with an opportunity to consolidate even more wealth, because all of middle-class America is going to get wiped out. Property values are going to collapse. Housing is going to become available, and the truly wealthy are going to be able to buy up more and more. They'll buy up small businesses. They'll buy up the homes. They'll buy up land. The way that the federal government, our government right now, acquired most of our public lands was during during two great depressions, the depression of the late 1890s and the depression of the 1930s. And people defaulted. People had held this land for ranching and farming and things like that, or for mines, and they defaulted. They couldn't pay property taxes on it anymore, and boom, we ended up with it.
Well, somehow I knew by calling you I'd get some answers or some thoughts.
You're welcome. Thanks, Ed, for the call. I'm not sure that it's, it's like, I don't have the answer. It's unfortunately, my hope. I would echo. Here's what I would say: is what Thomas Jefferson said. Thomas Jefferson said, "My hope for the future of this nation lies not with the rich, but with the people." And frankly, I don't think that motivating the wealthy in America to change our government in a way that helps the middle class is going to work. Frankly. I think instead we need to wake up the people. We the people. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A shrinking young workforce and a U.S. economic market turning from bull to bear is putting the squeeze on union pension funds. According to the New York Times, the Teamsters Pension Fund, covering almost a half a million workers, has only 60 cents for every dollar owed. Kenneth Kenpath, national organizer for Teamsters for a Democratic Union, says Teamsters have diverted a lot of their wage bargaining power into securing pension benefits.
The employers have driven to erode early retirement, to eliminate health care for retirees, which will force people to work longer till they get close to or at Medicare, and further draconian rules to break down the good pensions that Teamsters have fought for.
Since 1982, the Teamsters Pension Fund has been managed by Wall Street firms like Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan, companies who've shifted investments away from long-term bonds to stocks which generate fees. Similarly, President Bush and many Republicans want to shift Social Security investments away from a protected public trust into private savings accounts.
Once they privatize Social Security, we would have the return of massive old age poverty.
Again, Kenneth Kenpath.
We're not all going to become millionaires playing the stock market with an IRA, just as we won't all be rich if we bargain individually with corporations instead of having unions.
Kenpath says the union movement must unite under the threat of a corporate-styled Bush administration.
There is a general trend to privatize, individualize, to break down solidarity within our society. Solidarity in the labor movement doesn't just mean on the picket line. It means in our pension plans and our health plans that we care about the retirees, that we care about each other, that the higher paid workers have to fight for the lower paid workers or they're going to become lower paid workers.
For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real. Or it's
yeah, what's coming?
Exactly
what's coming?
From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day. Fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
There you go.
To the USA.
And as Jefferson said, it is we the people who will be responsible for it. It happened with Franklin Roosevelt. It was we the people who brought him to power. It's happened before. It's been done many times. On this day, in 1963, on the 22nd of November, Jack Kennedy was shot in Dallas. And in memory of that, and also highlighting this discussion that I just had with Ed from California. I want to share with you just a little one-minute clip. It's just a little bit over 1 minute of Jack Kennedy in 1960s talking about what he saw as his responsibility as a politician in America. These are the kind of politicians that we need to be finding and promoting from the grassroots up now in America.
I believe it incumbent upon the next president of the United States to get this country moving again, to get our economy moving again, to set before the American people its goals, its unfinished business, and then throughout the world appoint the best people we can get, ambassadors who can speak the language, not merely people who made a political contribution, but who can speak the language. I believe that this party, Republican Party, has stood still really for 25 years, its leadership has. It opposed all of the programs of President Roosevelt and others, minimum wage and for housing, economic growth and development of our natural resources, the Tennessee Valley and all the rest. And I believe that if we can get a party which believes in movement, which believes in going ahead, then we can reestablish our position in the world. Strong defense, strong in economic growth, justice for our people, guarantee of constitutional rights, so that people will believe that we practice what we preach. And then, around the world, particularly to try to reestablish the atmosphere which existed in Latin America at the time of Franklin Roosevelt. He was a good neighbor in Latin America because he was a good neighbor in the United States. Because they saw us as a society that was compassionate, that cared about people, that was moving this country ahead. I believe it's my responsibility as the leader of the Democratic Party in 1960 to try to warn the American people that in this crucial time we can no longer afford to stand still. We can no longer afford to be second best. I want people all over the world to look to the United States again, to feel that we're on the move, to feel that our high noon is in the future. I don't believe there's any burden of any responsibility that any American would not assume to protect his country, protect our security, to advance the cause of freedom. And I believe it incumbent upon us now to do that.
To do that. Get out there and get active. Politics is year-round, every day, waking people up. Thanks for listening today. I do appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll be live all this week, by the way, just as an FYI.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to the program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level.